We are in a series called Old Testament Flannel Graph, and you may notice that I am rocking a fantastic flannel shirt. Now, I have been promoting this for the entire series. Christina chose to completely disregard it, did not wear flannel. Karademus, Steve, who has flannel, right? I was sure he was going to be rocking some flannel. No, he didn't. So I am wearing some flannel. And this morning, if you've got a Bible or smartphone or something and you want to kind of catch up to the story we're dealing with, it's found in the book of Daniel. And in the book of Daniel, we have a story of three young guys and a buddy of theirs. We have the story of Shadrach, all right? And we have Meshach, all right, right there. And we have Abednego. Can Abednego stay? Stay there, Abednego. And then we have Daniel. You'll notice I'm kind of leaning back a little bit because I'm afraid that the flannel graph is going to fall on the floor and then I'm going to have to expose you to my bald spot. So we have this little story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and their friend Daniel. Those of you who have, you know, sort of 90s kids or parents or whatever, you'll recognize these names of Shadrach and Benny. Thank you, Veggie Tales. And this story takes place around 600 B.C. Interesting, as I was doing some study, that is a similar time as the Eastern philosopher Confucius. And so that maybe gives you a little bit of an idea of the era of this story. Shadrach, Benny, and their friend Danny. Now, what you need to understand about this story, the context here, is that these are a people, a country, cities, who had been taken siege. King Nebuchadnezzar had taken siege of these people. And if you're not really sure what that means, just think conquest, think war. Maybe think Braveheart, you know, how you saw the battle going on for the different cities and who was in charge. Maybe think Russia and Ukraine or maybe even colonization. But that was the context of the story that we are looking at. It's kind of this idea that has been, you know, as old as man is. When you're bigger, stronger, you think you're smarter, and so you want to dominate people. And that's what was happening through King Nebuchadnezzar, who had taken over the guys and Danny and their friends and neighbors, their country and their city. Now, what was becoming a practice when a nation was sieged, when it was overtaken by others, was that the people who overtook them would then kind of scour out, sort of look around and ask around a little bit and try to discover who were the elite, if you like. Who were the smart ones, who were the fastest ones, strongest ones, you know, whatever it was. And they would be selected to become a part of the leadership of this new world, this new sort of living out of that particular nation. And Shadrach and Benny were three of those, and Danny certainly was a part of that as well. But as you can imagine, when this siege took place and there was this new sort of world order, this new way of living things out, there was a lot of conflicts. And so that's kind of where we take it. We're gonna lean into sort of three scenes, if you like, three different little interaction parts of the story that are kind of crazy and kind of wild. And I'm just going to make my way over now to the flannel graph, and I got these guys to stick to me. And so, again, we have our Shadrach and our Meshach and Abednego. And what was taking place was, as I said, was that they were being trained up, and they were being offered opportunities that others may not have got. And one of the opportunities they had was that the man in charge, the guy kind of below Nebuchadnezzar, was offering them the food and the drink of the people there. And it was the royal stuff. This wasn't any leftovers. This was the real deal. I just about lost my meat there. There's our little wine glasses. It's fantastic. Now, what happened was they were being offered this, but Daniel kind of came along and he said, you know what, as much as we appreciate this, and he was very respectful. That's one of the things that we need to understand, super respectful. And he said, you know, I would like you to just offer us, you know, not all of this wine, not all of this meat, not all of this other stuff, but I would actually like you just to offer us some vegetables. And the leader said, no, I can't do that. I've been told you have to take this. And Daniel said, well, if you could just maybe trust me in this a little bit, could you maybe just feed myself and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego for 10 days? And let's just see what it looks like. And so they came to this agreement. Let's do 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, let's just see who is the better. Well, after 10 days, it turned out that they were much healthier. And this is where I get a little nervous in the story that somehow my barbecue is not going to be used anymore. I don't cook vegetables on my barbecue. The only thing I cook on my barbecue is meat. And so I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen with that as a result of this story. But after the 10 days of just vegetables, they were looking healthier. And so Daniel was rewarded. And they continued to be fed that. So that's kind of the first story. Interesting little interaction. Daniel had found favor in the eyes of the leadership there, and yet he acted with incredible respect to the man. Well, as the story carries on, things change a little bit. Mealtime is gone, and they're continuing to get their meals. No longer are they having all of that fancy stuff. The leader comes to a whole bunch of wise men. So at the beginning of this story, we don't have Daniel, Shadrach, or Meshach, or Abednego, but we've got the king, all right, right there, up above everybody, of course, and then we've got his magic men, his wise people, his advisors. And what was happening was that Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and he said to all of the wisest people in the land, he said, listen, I need you to not only tell me what the dream was, but I need you to tell me what it was all about. What's the meaning behind it? And these wise people came to him, and they're like, well, we can't do that. And Nebuchadnezzar said, yeah, you will. Matter of fact, if you don't, I'm going to kill you. This is a little bit of a tyrannical dictator here, folks. A little unstable at times. And they're like, we can't do that. And they actually said, this is a really cool little line in the story there. They actually said, well, no one on this planet is what they said. No one in this land, no human being can do that. Well, Daniel hears about this story. And if you can sort of, let's move king over there, and Daniel comes to the top man in the land, and he says to him, listen, I've heard there's a bit of a problem, and the king's a little bit upset because his wise people cannot figure out the dreams and all. He goes, how about you let me figure it out? How about you give me a couple of days and let me kind of see what's going on? And so the advisor let Daniel do that, and Daniel went away, And he asked, and he actually, the wording in the story is he urged Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and others to pray. And he cried out for mercy, that God would give him the wisdom of not only what the dream was, but what it meant as well. And during the night, as Daniel was praying, God actually gave him what it was all about. He understood what the dream was, and so he went to this leader, and he said, I know what this is. Can you let me go see the king? And he said, of course. And so he went, and he had an audience with the king. His wise men were not there. Had an audience with the king, and he explained to King Nebuchadnezzar what the dream was all about. And the king said to him, that is amazing. No one else in this land, all my wise people, they couldn't do this at all. Truly and surely, your God is the God of gods. And he is worthy of all honor and worship and praise. And so they would break out a band just like we had this morning and start singing. Well, actually, that's not exactly what took place. Did I mention earlier that Nebuchadnezzar was a little unstable and you didn't always know from day to day what was going on? Well, the story continues. And although Nebuchadnezzar had said, I think your God is the God of gods. He's amazing. That's unbelievable. How in the world did he know those, the dream? Well, Nebuchadnezzar then put out an edict, and he made a huge golden statue. And he said to all the people, he said, I want you to bow down and to worship only that statue. Well, that became a bit of a problem. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, you know what, King Nebuchadnezzar? We can't do that. We're not going to worship your king. He said, well, if you don't, you're going to be thrown, into a burning fiery furnace. And they said, well, okay. I mean, if that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do. Matter of fact, they said just a really powerful statement of faith, and that they listen, our God can deliver us, but if he doesn't, we're still not going to worship your God, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. You know what? They were thrown into the fiery furnace, and here's an amazing picture of the fiery furnace right there. Little billow of smoke. Are you loving the flannel graph work right now, folks? This is amazing. Shadrach and Benny are now in there, and Nebuchadnezzar noticed that there was a fourth person in there, and God was with them. God was with them. Now, I mentioned earlier that this is pretty crazy and wild stories. These are something else, these three different scenes that we've looked at and that we've sort of delved into a little bit. And as important as the details of this story are, I think there's some questions that we need maybe to answer, or at least we should consider. And maybe one of the first questions is this: could that really have happened? Could those things be actual historical events? Or are they just a great opportunity to use flannel graph and tell a kid's story? Could they really have happened? Could they be? Now, depending on your worldview, if you like, you're going to answer this in a different way. You may be a naturalist, and you think, well, actually, what takes place in our world is really a self-enclosed thing. The only thing that really is here is what you see, because what you see is what you get. There isn't anything outside of the world that we have. And you would be considered a naturalist. And if that is your position, you're hearing their stories, and you might be mildly entertained, but you're not taking them at face value, because that's a little crazy. How could that actually happen? A supernatural experience, a miracle like that, how could that be? And for those of us who live in the Western world, part of what makes us, makes us who we are, let's put it that way, is sort of that pioneering, get her done, we can figure it out way. And that's a good thing. But man, if that's taken too far, we tend to just rely on ourselves, and we tend to think it's just really all about us. And so this idea of a miracle, if you like a story of a fiery furnace and these young men, these guys not burning up, and God was actually with them, and they didn't get consumed by the fire, seems a little odd to us. I mean, that's just not something that science could prove. How could it really be? We think that science and sort of that factual ability to reproduce the same result is more what is important and is of value. And for a long time, science was viewed as a foe, if you like, against Christian faith. What's interesting, however, is that the the science discipline, the discipline of science, was actually something that was started, if you like, initiated by the Christian faith community. And the reason for that was that they took the idea, this concept that we were created in the image of God, that there actually is a creator, we're not naturalists, there is something actually outside of what we see, there's more than just this that meets the eye. And because we're created in God's image, we have this opportunity to discover who is God and what is he like and what's this world that he created in all its mystery. And so we have this tension when we read things like we read in the Bible. Could it be true? And that's a question that you at least need to consider and maybe answer for yourself this morning. Now, that's not just for the naturalist, but honestly, it's for those who maybe have been following Jesus for a few years. Because sometimes we become, if you like, a Christian, and we start following God, and as time moves on, it just sort of becomes normal, if you like. Sort of, it's just another thing in our life. And I want you to understand that if the God of this Bible, the God of these stories is true and these things can take place, our life should be lived differently than purely that. Now, some of these events in the stories, well, not some, all of them, actually, in the Bible, took place a long time ago. How in the world are we supposed to verify that? How do we do that? Well, there are ways, there are archaeological things, there are other historical references to some of the stories and all those kinds of things, but some of you are still going to go, you know what, if I can't see it, if I can't touch it, if I can't taste it, if I can't really just visually be there when it happens, it didn't happen. And when I was writing this, my pen just kept going, and it said, well, that's how my preschoolers lived. That might be something for us to consider. If my little preschoolers couldn't actually see it, if they just closed their eyes, they felt like things were gone. And we know that that's not a super mature way to do life. And so maybe as adults, we need to think a little bit, maybe open the box a little bit and to consider some other things. So I came across an author, a scholar, not just an author, not just someone who could get a book published, but this is a scholar. And his name is Craig Keener, and he was doing a commentary on the book of Acts. The book of Acts was the early church, and he was going along, and he was talking, you know, in his book as he was writing it, he was referencing some of the miracles that took place in there, and what I've discovered about Keener is, he's a Keener, oh boy, yep. He would do footnotes, and sometimes his footnotes basically take up the entire page. As a matter of fact, as he was talking about one of the miracles in his commentary on Acts, his footnote was becoming almost 100 pages. I know that sounds crazy, but when it got to that point, he realized, you know what, I should probably write a book about miracles. And so that's what he's done. He's written a 2-volume set, 1,100 pages on miracles. And these miracles that he's written about in this book, in this 2-volume set, are over the last 20 to 25 years, okay? So he's not going back to all of the Old Testament ones. He's going, listen, I believe these things happen, and one of the reasons I believe these things happen is because I can see God still doing some of these things today. And they're verifiable. And there are people who can put their eyes on it. There are people, there are witnesses who have seen them. They're not just anecdotal, but they're verifiable. They're pre- and post-CAT scan miracles, if you like. Not just if you like, literally, many of them were. I mean, these were things that doctors and problems within society, and God just reached in and did just amazing things, documented surgeries being canceled because of miracles. There's one surgery that was about to take place, and it was this little guy who had a club foot, and they were praying before the surgery, and one of the eyewitnesses who was sitting there had their eyes open as they were praying, and this person literally saw the foot changing. And little toes started to develop. how are you doing? Now, I didn't see that. And as I'm saying this in front of whoever is watching, part of me goes, I know it's true because I trust Craig Keener and I trust the verifiable things that he's written, the documents that he's had, the people who have talked about it. But as I'm saying it, I almost feel like some of you are going to think that I've lost it. And part of me goes, I don't want you to think that about me, so I shouldn't have said it. But the reality is, it took place. What do you do with that? Can our God work that way? One verifiable documented story was a leg that grew 6 inches. Folks, I pray for people when they've got headaches and migraines and all those kinds of things and maybe some of those other things, and I'm really glad when God answers that prayer. These are not headaches. There's over 1,000 of miracles mentioned in this book with documentation to back it up. I don't have time to go into it. There's so much resource material out there. The Christian faith is a faith that believes in a supernatural God who loves you and who loves me, who loves Shadrach and Benny and Daniel, and who loves the Shadrach and Bennies and Daniels of today. Now, the circumstances that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego faced, Daniel faced, has a little bit of a parallel to what we're experiencing today. So there's a little bit of a relatable thing to it. You see, what we've known is gone, and we're not sure what's to come. Certainly what Shadrach and Benny went through was gone. Their life was completely radically changed, and they didn't know what was to come. I mean, their lives were being completely dominated and led by a tyrannical and at times unstable dictator who oppressed them. They didn't know what was going on. I actually just had a conversation with someone who had grown up in East Germany before the wall came down. Just crazy, the oppression that they were faced as they grew up there. And I've heard some of you say that we are oppressed right now as a nation, that we are being persecuted and all. And I'm like, you know, I'm not quite sure we can go that far, okay? Yes, we're not allowed to gather as a church, but neither are the Canucks. Neither are the indigenous folks, right? Neither are, you know, community groups. Like, this is not a church persecution. Can we please stop that narrative? But what we had is gone. And I don't know what's to come. I don't know what it's going to look like. I mean, everything's different, right? Doctor's appointments are different. We got to wear masks. Shopping's different. And I don't know what it's going to look like as we move forward. But we are not being told that we have to worship an idol. And that if we don't do that, we'll be thrown into a fiery furnace. We'll be killed. That's just not taking place today. So I think we do need to consider our faith. Let's bring this a little more into the faith realm. You see, what we've known is gone. And you see, I think what we can discover about that is maybe some of the things that our faith has been based on. It's a great opportunity, if you like, to evaluate. Has our faith practice been more prescriptive or descriptive? Has sort of, if you like, the weekend service, the weekend gathering, you know, do you remember those days, 4 services, all of that? Was that maybe the totality of your faith expression? Was that the main part of your, because listen, if it was, folks, that wasn't enough. The services are incredibly important as we were gathering and now as we're doing it in a scattered way to worship and be drawn together and to have a purpose together and to hear from God together. But it's so much more than that. It's a personal daily thing. It's to be done in community. Not just sitting in rows, but sitting in homes, which is why we've been promoting the home church. Listen, our world's been rocked, and I don't discredit that at all. And our faith expression, or our faith practice, I should say, has been kind of thrown into a blender a little bit. But our faith has not changed. Our God has not changed. So I'm asking you, what maybe does your practice of that expression of your faith, what does that need to look like today? You know, perhaps this is actually a wonderful opportunity that you've been shaken up a little bit to discover what is your faith really based in and on. It's widely stated and known that when the heat's on, if you like, when the pressure's on, character is revealed. What's really valuable, what's really important, who we are, what matters most to us is revealed. The heat was on for these guys, literally. And the heat's on for us. Yeah, I mean, there's pressure here. It's a challenge. There's no doubt about it. And it's likely only going to get worse as the fall comes. But let me read for you their response to Nebuchadnezzar. Here it is. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to King Nebuchadnezzar, "We do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it. And if he will deliver us from your majesty's hand, but even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up." That's a gulp right there. That's a big statement. It's a song that I love by Lauren Daigle on her album, How Can It Be. It says, "I will trust. I will trust." Can you do that? Can you trust? You know, what is your level of trust? Where does it reside in this season? Will he deliver you in the midst of this or not? Will things change? I don't know exactly, but can you say, you know what, whether things change or not, I'm going to trust God. Why? Because he's a faithful God, as we sang about. Why? Because he's a God who's been with men and women throughout the pages of history. Because throughout the history of the church, there have been men and women, young and old, who would completely agree with the guys. Respectfully speaking to Nebuchadnezzar, he will deliver us, but if he doesn't, we will still trust. Can you do that? Can you work towards that? Can you grow in that? I'm with the guys. I believe that the God we worship is a good God that can be trusted. Let's pray together. God, this is personally challenging. This is collectively challenging for us as a church. It's probably one of those gulp moments for those who are trying to figure out who you are. They may not quite be in the following of you, if you like, category, but they're trying to figure it out. This whole concept that there really is a supernatural God who can step in and do amazing things, but doesn't always. And can we trust him? God, I pray that I would grow in that. I pray that we as a group, as a church, as a community, that we would grow in our trust of you and that you would radically change who we are and how we live. For your glory, God, and for those that we do life with, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.